You're listening to Retronauts, a part of the Greenlit Podcast Network, a collective of creator-owned and fully independent podcasts focused on pop culture and video gaming. To learn more and to catch up on all the other network shows, check out greenlitpodcasts.com. This week in Retronauts, we welcome the new kids in town. Welcome to Retronauts. I'm Jeremy Parrish, and this week we're going to be talking about Animal Crossing, the capitalism simulator that makes indentured servitude fun. Hey, so who else is with me here this week on Retronauts? I think that's enough chill Animal Crossing vibe for the podcast. Yeah. Sorry, was that confusing? I didn't mean to be confusing.
I thought it was just our last recording of the day.
No, I'm not that low energy yet. Yeah, so who is with me here in the studio today to talk about Animal Crossing?
Hey, it's Bob Mackey, and Booker is a cop.
Hi, I'm Mike Choi, hardware dude, flip grip guy. I love Animal Crossing.
Well, there you go. And finally?
And I'm Katie McCarthy of Yoast Gamers. This is like my fourth Retronauts, fifth? I don't know. I've been on here a few times.
A veteran.
So this is your Retronauts new leaf?
Yeah. Yeah.
If exactly. The listeners write in and tell us how many episodes she was on, they win a prize.
And yes, any moment now, I don't know exactly what date this episode is going up because I forgot to look at the calendar, but it's coinciding more or less right about with the release of Animal Crossing. Mm-hmm. What is it? New Horizons?
New Horizons. Yeah.
For Nintendo Switch.
Talk about a perfect podcast game.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to – I drive to work now, and I'm going to find if there's a way for me to drive 80 miles down the highway – 80 miles per hour down the highway while also playing Animal Crossing because it seems like a perfect match.
Famous last words.
Oh, no. My famous last words will be like, whoa, I didn't see that truck because stupid Mabel. The Animal Crossing New Horizons coming out. For Switch, the first Animal Crossing game in, what is it, 7 years?
It's the longest gap. I looked it up. I was like, wow, it's been a while. It's been 6 or 7 years at least.
There have been some spinoffs in there. Nintendo was like, man, this game did so well for us that everyone is thirsty for Animal Crossing and we should explore lots of new avenues for Animal Crossing and make so many amiibo. And it was a bad idea, and now they're going back to basics and giving us what we really want, which is an Animal Crossing game on Switch. It also didn't help that Nintendo Wii U just – I think more people bought Animal Crossing New Leaf than bought Wii U consoles. So I think they were kind of reserving themselves until they had a decent install base again. And here we are. Switch conquered the planet, and now Animal Crossing will conquer Switch. So before we get into the actual conversation about Animal Crossing, I'd like to know when each of you kind of discovered the series and what your relationship with it is. Katie, let's go clockwise this time instead of counterclockwise.
Yeah. So I was a weird kid. I didn't have a Nintendo console until the Wii. I was a PlayStation kid. So I didn't get to Animal Crossing until City Folk here. Yeah. And that game controls very strange because obviously it's controlled by a Wiimote. But I feel like I got really into Animal Crossing with New Leaf. But before that, growing up, it was, the game I always wanted to play because, all my friends played it and loved it. And I was just like, I don't have the console for it. I can't experience this with everyone. But City Folk, finally, that was, my gateway into Animal Crossing in earnest.
Hmm. All right. Mike?
I started with the GameCube version. And I remember going to GameStop and selling, it must have been like 8 Nintendo 64 games to get Animal Crossing. And yeah, I mean, I just dove fully into that game, just playing it every hour that I could. I remember it was the back of the box said, the game plays even when you're not playing. And for me, that was my pitch to my mom. I was like, Mom, this game, it plays when you're not playing. That's great value. I always had to pitch my games to my mom. And yeah, I just remember that was like my gateway into learning, not just obviously about Animal Crossing. And like as a kid, it was like, you know, having all these friends in this little town, but also a big gateway into like Nintendo culture and all the different little Easter eggs and stuff that was stuffed into it. It was kind of a pathway to all that stuff for me, which is a big part of who I am today. So
I really associate this with a certain time in my life because I was a little bit older than Mike and Katie. I was 20 when the GameCube game came out, and I was living with a girlfriend for the very first time in my life. It did not end well, but we had a lot of fun times with Animal Crossing, and I got so burned out on this first game that I have not touched any of the other ones just because I played this so much. I was so naive. Like, I bought the DS game, and I was like, oh, cool, new Animal Crossing. I played it for a few hours. I'm like, this is just the game I played before. And it's kind of been that way since. But I think after almost 20 years, I'm now ready to play it again. But I will say, one thing in my life is a Animal Crossing reference that lives with me. So I got my bird, Louie, my African gray parrot, when Animal Crossing was new for the GameCube. And we didn't know what to name him. So we had the Animal Crossing strategy guide. And it was full of like character names. So we looked through that, and I landed on Louie for his name. And his name is Louie. So my bird is named after an Animal Crossing character who I don't even care about.
I had it's no like, idea your bird has been alive that long.
Yeah, yeah. He was born.
God. Parrots live a long time.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He was hatched.
That bird's going to outlive like all of us.
He'll be buried with me like Smithers. But yeah, he lives with me. And like every like 6 months I'm like, oh yeah, I named you after that gorilla in Animal Crossing who never even lived in my town. I just Louie
gorilla.
Thought that was cute.
Louie seemed like a good bird name in the strategy guide. So yeah, that is the element from my life that still lingers on. But I think now I'm ready for a new Animal Crossing.
That's like a baby naming book.
It's true.
Yeah.
It really worked out.
Yeah. As for myself, I discovered Animal Crossing with the GameCube version and picked it up when it came out and played it a fair amount. But I don't think I really got into it until the DS version because any game that I play, I'm going to relate to it more if it's portable. But I will say that the original GameCube version was the first time I ever got really wide exposure for a piece of games writing that I did. I wrote something for my personal site about the place of capitalism in Animal Crossing. And for some reason, Tycho at Penny Arcade really liked it and linked to it from the front page of Penny Arcade. And I remember this really clearly because not only did he do that, but I was in Japan for the very first time. So it was just like, wow, I feel amazing. I'm like visiting my girlfriend while she's doing her residency in Japan and seeing this cool place for the first time. And I'm famous because Penny Arcade liked me and everyone's reading my article. Yeah, so it was definitely Wild World that really got me hooked. And I spent a lot of time with that and with New Leaf, like 100 plus hours. And I did not even touch City Folk because they did not make that a portable game. But the Switch Lite is a very portable system. So I am going to play me some New Horizons. So we should look back on the origins of Animal Crossing. There's not really like a huge amount of drama around it because it's Nintendo and only a handful of games that they've created are very like have, you know, a sordid story, or at least we are only aware of a handful of games with a sordid story around them. So let's just talk about the developers first, who are kind of the creative visionaries behind this series. The original lead on Animal Crossing was a guy named Katsuya Eguchi, and he worked with Nintendo R&D1, which is now SPD, I think, the Software Planning Development, something like that. Anyway, the first major role he had was on Super Mario Brothers 3. So that's a pretty good start in the industry. He worked on Star Fox, another game with funny animals, Yoshi's Story, another super cute, soft, like, gentle game, Wave Race 64, which is actually the, very much the opposite, like butt rock and fast water skis, and Mario Artist, which is probably the most relevant to Animal Crossing. Other important people in the series, there's Aya Kyogoku, who is notable for being Nintendo's first female lead director. And she did not start with the series, but she came on, I think, with Wild World or maybe City Folk. And she's now – I feel like she's kind of the lead on the series now. Eguchi has – you know, he's older and he's kind of stepped back and is in more of the production supervisor type role. And so she is really sort of the visionary who spearheads the new games. And she's really great. I've interviewed her a few times. And she's – have you talked to her?
No, I've never – I want to.
Yeah, she's so good.
I would love
she's like,
Animal Crossing interview.
She's super down to earth and very like warm and like you can just understand why she is in charge of Animal Crossing. I would gladly follow her into hell is what I put into my notes. It's true. Like there aren't a lot of game developers where I'm just like, wow, this person is really great. But I really feel like – she is.
New Leaf was the first one that she was like in charge of, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So. Yeah,
yeah.
I just read that the direct opposite of Animal Crossing, she co-directed a Wizardry game.
Oh yeah,
before Nintendo, it's like such
like
the
Atlas
exact opposite. Wizardry: Tale of the Forsaken Land, 2001, assistant director. So,
she was with what was that? Success?
Atlas.
Atlas published it, but
yeah.
She developed it.
I don't know who developed that one.
That's weird. We should talk to her sometime about Wizardry and be like, hey, what's up with that hardcore, like, super death RPG you worked on?
Oh, the developer was RACJIN.
Rockjin. Okay, I've heard of them.
Yeah.
I don't know what else they did, though. All right. Other people involved in Animal Crossing. Hisashi Nogami. Well, he was actually kind of the director on a lot of the games. He is the crossing boss, as I put in the notes. But before that, he did a lot of in-game art and design in the 16 and 64-bit days. So he didn't come into being a director from directing, but rather from being an artist and an illustrator. And I think that kind of fits Animal Crossing because there are so many graphical assets in this game.
Yeah.
There's so many kinds of furniture and
just characters.
Bugs and characters. Just like, yeah, it's a game that every time you play, you're going to see something different in small ways. And that is burdensome. That's a lot of stuff to create. So I can see that. Isao Moro is another character – or another another character working on the series.
He probably is a character in the game.
But he actually recently departed from Nintendo to work in education, which is interesting. Hideki Kono, who we've talked about before on the show, he came into the series with the mobile spinoff from a few years ago, Pocket Camp. He's the guy who basically oversees the work that Indie Cube, which is a joint venture that was established by Nintendo and Dentsu, which is a huge marketing firm, like the marketing firm in Japan. They started this like collaborative side venture together back in about 2001 to create games like F-Zero for Game Boy Advance. Anyway, they work on Pocket Camp, and he is the one cracking the whip on them.
Huh.
He worked on Mario 2, 3, Mario World, and, of course, Mario Kart.
He also directed Luigi's Mansion, which is why Mario Kart Double Dash is so weird, because he didn't direct that one.
I see. Mm. He was busy scaring poor Luigi. And finally, last but definitely not least, is Kazumi Totaka, who is the guy who does the music. The music is so good. The music is always amazing in Animal Crossing. Every hour of the day, there is a different theme. And it's always good. And his music is so good, in fact, that they turned him into a character in the game. He is the dog, KK Slider. And every Saturday, he'll come to the cafe and he plays music for you. And he sings for you.
There's a lot of music in that game,
too.
A lot.
Yep. And I really feel like it is kind of his magnum opus in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Not any one game, just the series in general.
Totally.
And apparently New Horizons has all new themes for every hour, so
yeah.
I'm looking forward to my 24-hour marathon.
Yeah, you mentioned like the genesis of the game or the kind of origin story not being, you know, dramatic or anything like that. But I remember reading somewhere that Iguchi was inspired because he had moved like 300 miles or whatever to start his job at Nintendo. And being separated from his friends and family kind of inspired him to make a game where he had that feeling of community and that feeling of, like, you know, being part of a, you know, a village of people and that sort of thing. So it's kind of dramatic. Hmm.
So Animal Crossing, I believe, originally started as a 64DD game. It was
right.
the Japan-only magnetic disc add-on for the Nintendo 64. That device actually came out, but only like a handful of games came out for it because it was a huge flop. By the time it actually released after all kinds of development delays, it was pretty much unnecessary. So they didn't really do much with it. And Animal Crossing did originally come out on N64 in Japan only, but as a cartridge. And I feel like they would have had to cut back a lot of the things they wanted to do because so much of the game is about persistence and, you know, creating a world and coming back to it and it's always the same. Coming back to a save file 10 years later and there's roaches and weeds everywhere, but it's still the same. And the animals are like,
so realistic.
Where have you been?
It's only been 3,246 days since I saw you.
Right. So Eguchi did work on one of the Mario Artist games for 64DD, which was actually released. And the game he worked on, Talent Studio, doesn't really have a lot to do with Animal Crossing, but like there was this performance element where you were like creating a character who could sing and stuff. And I feel like there is some kind of spiritual connection there. Maybe I'm reaching a little, but I feel like he kind of got drafted into working on Animal Crossing because it was also going to be a 64DD game and also kind of like a sandbox for creativity and expression. And then
there's
it turned
like the
into
the whole art
thing.
Engine too in Animal Crossing, right? Which is, I don't know, is that kind of like the Mario Artist Studio thing?
It's much simpler.
It definitely has the Mario Paint like stamp maker in it.
Right.
Like the pattern maker in the old games was just
right.
the Mario Paint thing you did on the SNES.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it does kind of come out of that side of Nintendo, but then it's turned into this other thing. And around the same time, it's worth mentioning that Animal Crossing launched in Japan on N64 very early in 2001 when the system was pretty much moribund. I mean, it was always kind of moribund in Japan because it just didn't sell that well there. But by that point, the GameCube was really close to launching. So there wasn't a whole lot of excitement around it. But it came out just a few months after the release of The Sims by EA.
I definitely wanted to bring that up because I think it was lateral thinking, but it's so interesting how like two different cultures found this idea around the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Both games being very huge. The Sims being much bigger, of course. I'm not so sure anymore, but
interesting. At this point, the Animal Crossing games sell more than 10 million copies each.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely the winner now. But yeah, like right close to each other in time is The Sims. You are a person, you move into a new home, you make new friends, you get a job. It's much more like hardcore capitalistic, but a fantasy version of that than Animal Crossing. But yeah, it's so cool how these two ideas emerge at the same time.
Yeah, and I definitely don't think there was any like copying from each other's notes.
No.
It was really just memory and technology had gotten to a point where that was feasible. Like you look at 1997, we got Fallout, and that was a game that kind of famously tried to be persistent in a way that actually became burdensome by the end because all the changes you made, all the things you had done, everything you dropped on the ground, it was saved in the game. And I don't know how it was on PC, but I know on Macintosh, the game would actually like kind of overload with the save files and could actually have such a huge save file that it would crash. But the idea of creating this persistent world was there. And Animal Crossing and The Sims both took that concept of like, here's a persistent world. And that was also something that Shigesato Itoi wanted to do with Mother 3, the sequel to Earthbound, when it was supposed to be a 64DD game,
was to
create like this persistent world. It was something Microsoft and Lionhead were all like, persistent world, oh my goodness, with Fable a few years later.
Nice.
Like just the idea of creating a world that you could change and that reflected that always. But both The Sims and Animal Crossing turned it into something other than, you know, a murder RPG where you go around killing stuff to save the world. It was about like you know, instead of saying, hey, what if you plant a tree or plant an acorn and it turns into a tree when you come back years later?
Right.
Because that would be a thing you could do in an RPG for some reason. Here it's, hey, what if you planted a seed and it turned into a tree, and every day you could come back and you could see how it had sprouted a little more and there were new leaves on it, and then, you know, a week later you had a proper tree.
Yeah.
And it becomes part of this dynamic, changing world that you're constantly interacting with and shaping.
Before we move on, I think the real difference between The Sims and Animal Crossing is The Sims is really like a simulation of the perfect meritocracy where like every bit of hard work pays off. There's no other influences in your success and you can just like live that simulation where it doesn't apply in real life in any way. I think Animal Crossing is more like a child's view of adult life where it's just like, I'll pick berries today. And like you don't have a job. You can opt into many of the capitalistic features of the world. And like all the jokes about Tom Nook being like a greedy thief or like a scheming, money-grubbing jerk, like he is the most forgiving lender in the world.
Yeah.
Like
No interest.
Exactly. And you can pay him whenever you want, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no deadline.
If you don't pay him
off, if you don't pay him off, then he's like, okay, you just can't make your house bigger.
As home ownership eludes more and more of us, these Animal Crossing games are just becoming like a simulation of the ideal life for a lot of people, I think.
Well, I think another big difference between The Sims and Animal Crossing is that The Sims is very much a reflection of American suburban life.
Yeah, yeah.
In that it is based around the home. It's based around like creating your perfect home, building it, expanding it, and most of the interactions you have are within the home. When you go to work, you like your Sim goes off. You don't go to work with them. Whereas Animal Crossing is much more a Japanese perspective where it is about the community that you exist in. And you can take the time to decorate your home and you can, you know, pay off your loan and expand your home and then you have new rooms to fill. I always have a room full of gyroids because that is something I do.
It's the basement for me.
Yeah. The entrance for me. Welcome. Yep. So, yeah, you do have that home element and you can take pride in that. And, in fact, you know, some of the more recent games, you have the Happy Home Academy who come and judge the quality of your home and how much feng shui you have.
Yeah.
But that's not really the core of it. The core of it is going outside the home and mingling with the other residents, getting to know them kind of on their own terms, visiting their homes, doing things for them, contributing to the community. You know, in the most recent game, New Leaf, you became the mayor and you were improving the community kind of from your own pocket by building, you know, residential improvements for that all the townspeople could enjoy, but also contributing to the museum and adding artwork and just getting to know everyone, making the place more beautiful. And it does really seem to me like America versus Japan, where it's inward focused versus outward focused. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that is true.
One thing about that is like with Sims, I kind of feel like it's sort of like a sandbox, like you're sort of in it running experiments with these people in this world, whereas with Animal Crossing, you are the human in this little animal world. And I think one thing that's interesting about that is with like Kasumi Totaka, you know, he's always putting like these little bits, that little Totaka song in all of his games where it's like this little secret part of him that's in all these games. And in this game, he actually like puts himself in the game as like a character. That might not have been his decision, but I think it's an interesting example of that in Nintendo games.
All right, so let's talk about how Animal Crossing works. And it's pretty straightforward. It's a very low-stress kind of game. But basically, every game begins with you arriving in town. I don't think you talk to Rover anymore at the start, do you? Is that something you still do? Because I know that was the first game.
I'm trying to remember New Leaf.
It's been a while since I started.
It.
No, you don't talk to Rover at the beginning.
Okay, but in the original, you were actually – you started outside the town in a train or a bus.
Right.
And you were riding that to – the yeah, that's right. There's the train station. So you're riding the train to the depot, and on the way there, you basically answered some questions that determined what your character would look like.
Right.
Sort of outside your control. You didn't know what the answers were going to cause it to do. But you could affect it once you, you know, read a guide that was like, here's how you make your character look the way you want it to.
Yeah.
But basically, you randomly generate yourself a boy or a girl. And you arrive in town with nothing to your name. Your mom sent you there or something. And Tom Nook is like, well, we can't have you, you know, loitering. So let's build you a home. And you owe me 180,000 bells. And bells are the currency. And sometimes you find them buried in the ground. Sometimes you hit a rock and they pop out. Sometimes you sell fruit or bugs and you can get more bells.
I was starting a new file for the GameCube one and Rover's friends with Tom Nook. And he says, hey, I have someone coming in. Like, can you hook him up with a house? And then he goes, I guess under the pretense that you're going to pay for it when you get it. And then Tom Nook's like, okay, it's this much. And he said, I don't have any money. Or you have like 1,000 bells or something like that. And then he's like, all right, well, you know what? I'm going to let you live there and I'm going to give you a job. And so he is a really nice guy.
There is that kind of element of like it seems a little bit like it's rigged against you. And, you know, you're not told in advance, oh, yeah, I'm going to build you a house that you can pay for. It's just like, oh, I'll set you up with a house.
Or you could be joining a cult.
Right.
You're not aware of it.
I mean there definitely is kind of like a pervasive meme online about the cult element of Animal Crossing. There was a very famous, I think – a long play or a let's play on Something Awful that was kind of
familiar.
It was highly fictionalized and was, you know, basically went off into a direction that was not supported by the game, where someone was like trying to bust out all the animals and free themselves from this town. You know, a lot of this just comes from the limitations of the original version, where you basically didn't have a world outside of the town. Like the only way you could go outside of town was to use the link cable to communicate with a Game Boy Advance and go to a little island where you could play some mini games.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it was like you were kind of trapped there. That feeling has really gone away a lot.
You could put in someone else's memory card and then go to their town.
Okay,
And the scary part about that was that sometimes your villagers would move to their town. That was terrifying if your favorite villager would just go to the other town.
I think also their GameCube internal clock could mess with your town, because I gave a friend my memory card because he had a Pro Action Replay. He was going to give me the locked away NES games on Animal Crossing. When he gave me back my town, it was essentially destroyed because my animals are acting as if I had been gone for a year.
Right.
So I think maybe his GameCube clock was set back a year. So when they were on my town, like, oh, a year has passed since we were active. So very weird.
I mean, you could do all kinds of experimentation like that because it came with a memory card with little Rover on it.
Yeah, and there'd always be like one fruit your town would be lacking, sort of like Pokemon, so you'd need to visit.
You only have one fruit.
Oh, you only have one fruit?
You
okay,
start
yeah.
with one.
Yeah, that's one of the trademark elements of the series is each town has its own fruit. There's like 5 or 6 kinds of fruit, and what type you start with is randomly determined.
Mm.
And any fruit from outside of town is worth much more money to sell than your native fruit. So you can take fruits from other towns and plant them and make some really easy money early on in the game that way. So Tom Nook, the Tanuki businessman, sets you up with a home and that puts you into debt. And so then you're basically just working to pay off your debt. But again, as we've mentioned, it's not really a super urgent thing. You can kind of take your time. And if you don't want to expand your home, then you don't have to pay off your home. You go to the post office and like pay at the ATM basically to pay it off. So it's kind of – it's like the game is very concerned about money but is also kind of polite about it. Like it doesn't want to get in your face all the time. And then, you know, when you do pay it off, then everyone celebrates. And then Tom Nook is like, oh, yeah, I added onto your home. You owe me this much now.
Yeah, like you want to have a bigger home now, right, now that you just finished paying it off?
Yes, exactly. So in Animal Crossing, one of the things that kind of sets your character apart from every other character is that you are a human and no one else is. Everyone is an animal. But remarkably, there's nothing fetishistic about it. I mean, if you put aside internet illustrations of Isabelle, she's everyone's waifu, and they've gone some weird directions with her, the fans have. But otherwise, it's just like these cute little talking animals. They're not furries or something. There's no like undertone of sexuality or anything to it. It's just like these little talking animals who walk around. They speak in gibberish and they want you to do stuff. There are hundreds and hundreds of possible villagers that you can interact with. They have something like 7 or 8 different personality types. And so depending on their I think their species, their personality type, and their gender, they have all kinds of different conversational options and directions to go with you. So you can play these games for 100 hours or more and rarely come across the same dialogue that you've had before. The amount of – the volume of dialogue in there is exhaustive. And it's a tremendous localization effort. I can see why the N64 version did not come over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking like the dialogue is kind of like procedural, but that could be a bad word for it. But it's just like a collection of elements that are existing within the game's like memory. And to make this game work in English, they had to work very hard, and they did, because there are so many very Japanese-specific things. Like the gyroids are Haniwa statues from like the current civilization of Japan, like the Japan-specific holidays that are in the game that they have to rename and change, like so many things outside of just pure localization they have to work on.
Mm-hmm. They changed like the shrine in the center of the town to a wishing well for America.
Yeah, that too. Yeah. So many like text and visual elements, like really cool.
Yeah. I think my favorite personality is the mean boy personality. That's my favorite one. My favorite villager is Tom.
Really deep voices too?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's another thing about the game is that the animal language that they speak is actually phoneme based.
Yeah.
So when you stop and listen, they're basically taking every single letter that appears in a word and pronouncing each letter very rapidly. So sometimes some of the words come out sounding like the actual word. And I think that probably works a lot better in Japanese because every phoneme there is like a syllable that ends in a terminal vowel. So they're not saying like M instead of M. They're actually saying M because that's the sound.
Mm. Yeah.
So
you can actually turn that off in the options too, and it says that it's animal knees. That's what
called.
Yeah. Which is kind of a weird name for it.
It's kind of like Simlish, but it's but for animals.
Another comparison. I like it.
Yeah. And one of the things that I am always really impressed by is the way there's this mimetic element to your interactions with the villagers. So you can like come up with catchphrases or nicknames and things like that. And they'll start getting passed around from animals. And you don't really know what the vector is going to be or where it's going to resurface. But randomly a character will be like, oh, I heard someone say that you like to be called such and such, so I'm going to start calling you that now.
Oh, yeah.
Or they'll just like give you a nickname and then other people will pick up that name even though you didn't want it. And, you know, it's just like jerks.
All my villagers started calling me M Money at some point. I guess this is my life now.
Yeah, and you can trade T-shirts with like T-shirt designs with characters.
That's
and they'll
right.
like wear them with pride. But then after a while, they'll give them away to someone else. So you'll see like clothing that you created circulate from character to character in the village.
I remember – I forget what the Wii functionality was, but there was some fake scandal about how there was some naughty content in the game. But it was really because somebody went online and got a naughty word from somebody or like a naughty stamp from somebody or something like that.
Yeah, it was a racial slur in one of the animal catchphrases.
Yeah, good.
And it was, I think, in one of the review like copies. I could be wrong about that. So it was like very easy for it to propagate because the sample size was so much smaller. But, you know, people trying to corrupt this innocent little game.
So how dare they?
I know.
So I feel like there is a pretty simple gameplay loop to Animal Crossing, but I'm curious how everyone approaches the game. Katie, how do you approach Animal Crossing? Is it methodical or is it just like willy-nilly?
I kind of like had, especially New Leaf, like maybe it's more fresh in my memory because that was a few years ago-ish. But I would like play it every day and I had like a schedule of what I would go and do. It's like, okay, I'm going to go hunt for fossils and turn them into the museum and you know, shake some trees and sell the fruit and like all that type of stuff. But I also got really into designing stuff and sharing the QR codes on like Tumblr, which with New Leaf, that was a huge thing of people sharing their designs. And it was kind of like an extension of what was introduced in City Folk of like sharing your stuff online. Mm. but it was like way easier with New Leaf because you could just post a QR code and now you can download like a Kiari Pomu dress and whatnot. So it's like pretty easy and fun. And I got like really into like that aspect. I'm like not a good designer or drawer, but like it was pretty easy and fun. You just zoom in really close.
Mike, what about you?
You know, I played them all the main series ones. I haven't played Amiibo Festival and I haven't played a ton of Pocket Camp. But going back to the GameCube version, it showed me just how many quality of life things they've introduced over the years. Like for the fossils, for the GameCube one, Blathers,
it's agonizing.
He can't. Yeah. He doesn't have the license to. He says in the game, like, I don't have the license to evaluate these fossils. You need to ship them to the to the fossil place or whatever, and then you have to wait for them to come back, and then you turn them in. And you can't even in the GameCube one, you can't even fill a hole with your foot. Like you have to just put your shovel back into it. It's like little things like that. But, you know, it was still, I think, the GameCube one is deceptively simple at first. You think like, oh, there's not that much stuff to do, but there's such a deep, I don't know what you would call it, but there's just like, there's so many things to do if you really stick to it and go in every day and you discover all these little secrets, like the presents flying through the air, or people who wash up on the shore and stuff like that. So, I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of those games that, if you play it every day for a year and you experience all the content, it's absolutely massive. Mm. It's huge.
Yeah, one of the things that is really impressive about Animal Crossing is how the game world does seem to change with the seasons. I mean, it's kind of hard boundaries. It's like July 1st. Yeah. Here's the locusts or the cicadas. Right. They're singing. But, you know, it does create a different tonal quality for when you play. Like playing in the spring is very different than playing in the winter or the fall.
Yeah. Yeah, because all the bugs change and the activities change and all the conversations are so contextual. Like, you know, one of my favorite things about Animal Crossing, and I think it was only in the GameCube version that they did this, but during the winter, some animals, they would set up igloos and they have a little bubbling cauldron of chowder in the middle of the igloo. And you go and then you play gambling games with them. They're like, I'm thinking of three numbers. If you guess it correctly, I'll give you a chair. Or something like that.
Classic toy day activities.
Yep. Gambling over stew. Bob, what about you?
When I played the original a lot and a bit of the DS version, and I really played with no real agenda. Like, I've known people who played the games very methodically where they'll have, like, a spreadsheet or they'll have a list of things to check off. Like, I have to make sure I get everything out of every day possible. But for me, it was like, what will I find today? And then when I started scraping up against, like, you know, not seeing new things in a certain season, I would be like, okay, how do I find the rest of the things in this season and try to complete them that way? But for me, it was more like, what will I find today? What will I discover today? And it was very open-ended for me in that way.
Yeah, I tend to be somewhat structured in that each day I kind of start out by walking around looking for the fossils and smacking the money rock, trying to get the cash. Trying to get the money bag that pops out if you hit it fast enough. Just like a Super Mario Brother question
shaking
block.
The money tree.
Yeah, exactly. I don't tend to shake the trees a lot because I hate bees. Bees
are the worst. So scary.
Anyway, so yeah, I do tend to do that. And my overarching goal is usually, one, to complete my museum and just get everything in there that I can. And two, to make the town pretty, to make it beautiful, create pathways and line it with flowers and trees. I tend to be sort of not a like GMO, but I definitely create a monoculture of different trees, like fruit trees. Like I get rid of just about every tree that does not bear fruit except for a few pines. And I might put a bamboo in the corner someplace, but you have to be careful with those because bamboo – sprouts like it spreads. It's kind of like a virus or something. And you have to be careful because if you don't pay attention and you let bamboo go, it'll just override everything.
You know, I think for me, the biggest part for me, especially as a kid playing with the villagers and like fixating on one villager as like my best friend.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Like I quit playing City Folk because my favorite villager moved away.
That's a bummer.
It was Anchovy, who's a lazy bird. He had like big eyes and he was just like so funny. So he was like my best friend. And then just I think I took a few days off and I logged back in and it was like,
oh,
it was just like
so
a note. It was so sad.
I don't know if they made this any better, but it feels like a betrayal because they're just gone.
Yeah, they're
like
just gone, a letter. And there's like, hey, I'm sorry, I peaced out.
It's a real Irish goodbye.
In New Leaf, they definitely changed that a lot because I think they got a lot of feedback that it really bums people out.
So sad.
So you have more influence over characters leaving. They'll start to drop hints in advance like, yeah, I've been thinking about moving out. And you'll have opportunities to be like, no, don't do that. And so you can kind of nudge them to stay.
I feel like you can even get to their house when they're packing up and you see all the boxes in their room. And you can be like, no, don't leave. And they're like, you know what? You got me. I won't leave.
Sometimes they will, though. Sometimes they're like, no, I've got to get out. But
yeah. See you later.
Yeah. Of course, it's more important to me to be able to get rid of villagers that I don't want. Some of the villagers, I'm just like, get the hell out of my town.
Smack them with the net.
Especially the ones that are always active during the hours that I'm active, because I usually tend to be able to play at a certain time in a day. And there are characters, you know, depending on their personality type, they may not get up until, you know, 11 a.m. or they may get up really early. And being stuck with characters you don't like who are active when you're around, you're just like, you're ruining my experience. Get out of my town.
Yeah. You put them in a pitfall. Smack them with a net or an axe.
It's weird that these characters can evoke such emotional reactions from us when they're just like they're just like different versions of the same character model.
Like pulling from a database of dialogue.
Yeah, and they also, you know, kind of have a pretty set amount of dialogue that they can give you. But it just seems so organic. It's really impressive how they fake that.
So you're asking how we played the games. I just remembered something. It will tell you how old I am and how old the series is. So when I was playing the game, I loved Mario Paint as a kid, and this was like almost 10 years later. So I love making patterns and stamps and stuff. Mm. And what I would do was on my computer, I would go to this website that let you put in any JPEG, and it would spit out essentially the pattern for Animal Crossing. I would print that out and then bring it over to the TV and then sit down and fill out like dot by dot on the grid the entire thing. And, like, it took me 20 minutes, but I made a Klonoa to put on my front door. That is how old I am and how old the series is. There were no smartphones to look at it. There was no touch interface. It was me printing out a piece of paper and then looking dot by dot on the TV and doing
it. That's okay, Bob. I want Klonoa.
I'm sure you can put him in the new game too. It's worth it.
I remember doing Paper Mario, but it was Luigi in Paper Mario style making that pattern. I imagine that interface is like a lot of young pixel artists' kind of like first tool for designing that sort of stuff, which is really cool.
They say with age comes wisdom. Well, over here at the Cartridge Family, we only have one question. Who are they? Join three imperfect dads as they juggle kids, wives, and jobs while indulging in their favorite hobby, playing video games.
The Cartridge Family, a Greenlit Network podcast.
How does Bloodborne stack up against, say, Oregon Trail? And is Bomberman just Lodrunner from a different point of view? Find out on Hardcore Gaming 101's Top Games, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games you nominate for our ever-growing list. HG 101's Top Games, twice a week, every week, right here on Greenlit.
Running diagnostics in 3, 2...
Men Like That is a podcast.
Good so far?
That really sucks.
Oh no! Shut her down!
No, shut her down!
They thought they could make something funny. They can't do anything.
Listen to Men Like That!
Thank you.
So let's go over all the things you can do in Animal Crossing. And I'm sure I'm going to be missing some things.
Oh,
so please, step in to correct me. But first, there's fruit. We talked about fruit a little bit. But fruit falls from trees. If a tree can bear fruit, it will grow fruit every few days. And it'll sprout one and then like more will show up. And if you shake it off when there's just one, then it'll take longer to regrow. So you kind of have to be patient and let it properly sprout. But you can eat fruit. There's no real value to this. You can give it to villagers.
Just like in real life.
Yeah. Or you can sell it. Or you can plant it and another tree will grow that will bear that kind of fruit. So, yeah, I don't know. Are there any interesting strategies or memories you have of regarding fruit?
I mean, like what you mentioned earlier about getting a fruit from another town and then selling that was, I guess, a strat. Like, I feel like it was back in the day with the Wii version is I would look online for, like, a lot of strategies, like, in, like, old forums and whatnot. Of, like, I was always a lurker. I think I only posted on, like, Gaia Online in, like, middle school. But it was a lot of, like, okay, what are other people doing? Like, how are they getting the most bills? Like, what can I do to pay off my loan so I can build another room or whatever? And it's just fascinating. I think, and that obviously grew with, like, Tumblr and the 3DS for, like, with New Leaf. That was, like, there's just strategies everywhere. And that was, like, a harder game to game. If that, like you know, resetting the clock and everything, is like, much harder to, like, figure that out. I don't know how it's going to work on Switch. Probably not.
Yeah, it's probably going to be, like, it'll chat with the central database or something.
Yeah.
It'll be a server.
It's a bummer.
You know,
it's okay. I never gamed the clock. I always did it organically.
I did on Wii.
I gamed the clock all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, that's, I did that a lot. But yeah. I didn't do it on New Leaf at all.
Especially as an adult. Yeah, especially as an adult, it's important. I think in New Leaf, they acknowledged that and they made it easier for you to switch that so you could experience different parts of the day so that you weren't always there at night.
There's QOL improvements in New Leaf.
Yeah.
So you don't have to cheat the clock because you don't just cheat the game, you cheat yourself.
Yeah. You can also like introduce what town decrees that make everyone stay up later.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, you're a tyrannical mayor. Sweet mayor, but tyrannical.
You know, for the fruit, in college, my fiance Joanna and I, we were in a long-distance relationship, and the fruit was, like, such a nice shared goal to be able to try and, like, you know, it was kind of like Pokemon, you know, you, like, want to complete the Pokedex, but I remember we were trying to get every fruit and propagate them in our respective villages, and so I have a lot of fond memories of, like, oh my goodness, you got a peach from your mom.
Yeah,
hand it over.
I was really worried about how I'd be able to fill out my town, because when, you know, Wild World and New Leaf came out, I was working in the games press, so I was around people playing Animal Crossing all the time. It was easy to trade stuff. Thankfully, I just got a job at a game publisher, so I'm no longer isolated in my home anymore. I go to the office, and I'm going to be hooked up. So that's good. Also, something to remember about fruit is that starting, I think, with New Leaf, there's the island, and that grows tropical fruit. And each town has one kind of tropical fruit, which is like a banana, a pineapple.
It's like a mango.
Coconut. No, coconuts wash up on the shore. A mango, I think, is another one. I think there were four total. I can't remember. But
isn't there a durian, right?
Yes,
yeah,
that's right.
Durian, yeah.
Yes. And then in the town, you can have like orange, cherry, apple, pear.
Peach.
Or peach. And I think maybe one more. I don't know. Anyway, there's plenty to do. There's lots of fruit to cultivate. And I kind of get obsessed with it sometimes. There's also fossils. I mentioned those. We didn't really explain what it means for blathers to appraise them. Do you want to talk us through that, Mike?
Yeah. So, I mean, in the GameCube one, you basically find these fossils. There's like three that generate every day or something like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a little X mark on the ground. You dig it up. You take it to Blathers. And in the GameCube one, he just says, oh, wow, this is great, but I don't have the license to do it. You have to ship it. And so you have to ship it to this
museum. Well, you have to explain the fact that when you dig it up, it's just like a miscellaneous rock. You don't know exactly what it is.
Yeah, you just see like a little swirly and a little star on it. And then when you get it back, it's like a dinosaur skull icon. But it can – they have actually like a really thorough selection of fossils like – the head of a triceratops, the torso of a triceratops.
Yeah, there's like 20 dinosaurs and they can be like one or two pieces. You can like, you know, there's maybe ammonite or something.
Yeah,
it's just
like
one fossil. But then you can have, you know, a T-Rex with, you know, five or six pieces. Yeah.
And once you finish all three parts, Blathers gives you like a lesson on what it is. And like this was during the paleo whatever period. And it's a lot of – I mean, like you said, it's a lot of dialogue, but – and it definitely takes a long time to do. But if you get a multiple or like a duplicate of a fossil, you can sell it for big money.
Yes. Fossils are worth a lot of cash.
Yeah.
And actually, you don't have to give every fossil to the museum.
Yeah, you could just sell it.
Yeah. Even if the museum doesn't have it, you can be like, no, I'm keeping this for myself. Why would you do that?
If you want to watch – some men just want to watch the world burn.
Those bones are mine.
You can also do the same thing with fish. You can create a collection of fish in the museum, the aquarium. And fish can be caught in rivers, in the off the beach. There's a pond. Yeah. And then you can go to the tropical island and catch fish there.
Yeah.
Are there any other ways to catch fish?
No, but you can get like trash.
That's true. You can get boots or tin cans.
Such
whatever.
A statement.
Yep. And there are certain fish that are much harder to find than others. I think the hardest is the coelacanth, which is like a fossil fish that still is alive. But that's kind of the big one. And it's a very simple, basically fishing game kind of mechanic where you'll throw out your rod or your line and there's a bobber and a fish, if it sees it, you can see the shadow underwater. It'll come and nip at it and make little –
rumbles.
It'll twitch a little bit, but then when the fish really takes a bite of the bait, there's more of a dramatic pull on it, and that's when you snag the fish and then pull it in.
It's very satisfying. In fact, I just played the very short game called A Short Hike, and there's fishing in that game, and the fishing in that game is the exact same fishing as Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
I mean, it works. It's so good.
And the rumble in the GameCube controller kind of gives you a cue on when to actually pull it in. One thing is after the fish bites, I would always like furiously smash the A button. And then like maybe a year ago, someone was like, you don't need to do that. You just press it once. And
it's automatic. What? Yeah.
Yeah. Changed my life.
Also, tapping or pressing the B button does not help you catch Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. There's art, which you can also hang in the museum, and this is a little harder to come by.
Yeah.
Because basically, as far as I know, unless someone trades it with you, which happens very infrequently, you get art by going to Red's tent that pops
crazy
up.
Crazy Red.
It's Crazy Red. He pops up a tent and he lets you take a piece of art or buy a piece of art, and there's a chance it's going to be a forgery. And you can always tell the forgeries if you look at them really carefully because there's tells. But I will say that in the art's favor, it's the only way you're going to find nudity in a Nintendo game.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are accurate depictions of classical art.
You can also get those peeing mannequin statues.
Oh, yeah. So it's a very naughty game. Very naughty.
So naughty.
Other things with the museum, insects. There are insects all over the place. Sometimes you have to look for them. Sometimes you have to dig them out of the ground.
The elusive giant stag.
Yes. You go to the island.
Yeah, I was about to say like there's like that strategy of you go to the same island and you just very carefully creep around to get the giant bug thing, beetle.
Yep. Yeah.
And Blathers doesn't like the bugs. So every time you
oh, I love that touch.
He freaks out. But he'll take them and he'll put them on display. And yeah, there are some really great insects, like this is very Japanese, the beetle collecting. But there are also very mundane insects. Even the bees that attack you count as insects that you can catch and take to the museum.
That's right.
There are, you know, flies and grasshoppers, and there's like the mole cricket that you have to dig out of the ground by listening to where it is.
Yeah.
So a lot of fun details. They crawl, they fly, they buzz, they burrow.
Yeah. You can put all that stuff in your house too. I forgot that you could just like put a giant T-Rex, you know, fossil in your house if you want to be a true baller.
There are constellations, which you cannot collect, but you can define. You can like create your town constellation, right?
Was that was in Wild World for the first time? Yeah,
because the first game had like a town song and a town crest or flag, maybe. I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because Wild World had the top screen, and so the top screen is where you got the constellations.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
Right, and so Wild World introduced Celeste, who is Blather's sister, who works at the observatory. And looks at the sky because that is her name. She was doomed by her parents to be an astronomer.
Yeah.
But, of course, the main thing to do in Animal Crossing is town improvement and home improvement by I don't know, especially with New Leaf, like there's a lot of things you can do in town. Like you can add bridges. You can buy benches or statuary or what else is there?
You can add the reset in New Leaf. You can add the reset center, the reset surveillance center, which they got rid of because Mr. Resetti was scaring little children with his
scary guy.
Offensive Italian stereotype. He was like a mobster, though, which was what I liked about
his
him.
His brother is Don Resetti.
Oh, you're right.
That's right.
Yeah.
But not like Mafia Don. It's supposed to be like don't reset.
Mm.
We'll talk about Resetti a little bit later.
It's a good point.
Yeah, okay.
There's a lot you can do. You have to be vigilant to prevent weeds from growing because they will diminish the appeal of your town. And if your town is left to be ugly, the animal villagers are more likely to move out. You can plant flowers. You can plant trees. You can create pathways by creating like stone patterns or brick patterns or any pattern really, but laying that down on the ground. You can get as elaborate as you want. Of course, you know, all your hard work can be for naught because it is possible for a new villager to come in and just destroy something that you've created by planting a house, you know, just any old place. But what can you do? I'm trying to think. Are there other things you can do in town to make it awesome?
They don't like when you chop down too many trees, right?
Yeah. There's like an optimal – you can have too many and then you can have too little, which is you start with too little.
The Japanese title is Animal Forest. I've got to make it a forest. I've got to max out each acre with as many trees as I can get.
Yeah.
I mean, Animal Crossing taught me what a mortgage is, like truly. Because like my parents have never owned a home, so like that word was just never thrown around when I was a kid. And like hearing it for the first time in Animal Crossing, I was like, what is this? Hmm. And then learning it's just, you know, horrible.
I will say that it is not an accurate mortgage.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of someone who has one, there is no property tax, which, by the way, just went up for me. It's very exciting. And you don't have to pay like mortgage insurance and things like that. I like the Animal Crossing version better. They don't get after you if you don't pay it every month. Yeah,
it just seems nice. You know?
No HOA.
I was going to mention that, yeah.
There's the HHA, which is much nicer. They just come in and are like, hey, good work. Your house is really cool. Or your home could use a little improvement. They're not like, hey, you didn't pay us $250 last month, so we're going to charge you extra money and we're not going to mow your lawn anymore.
We're going to break your windows.
Yep. And finally, the coolest collectible and also the scarcest collectible is NES games. That was only in the GameCube version.
Oh, yeah. And for some reason, two were locked out. Punch-Out and Super Mario Brothers were locked out. And you could send them to the Game Boy Advance, too, into the RAM.
Yeah. You know, for me, the NES games – so growing up, my dad worked in an electronics swap meet. And so – there were stores there that had even my dad might have even sold them. I might be snitching on my dad right now. He sold these like, you know, there's like 3,000 in one consoles that had like, you know, it was the same like 200 NES games just repeated over and over again with different titles.
Right.
And I remember it was like a N64 chassis, but like with the cartridge molded in, and it was an N64 controller, which is like,
oh, that's great.
You know, but I remember that was sort of like as a kid, like drinking from the fire hose for retro games, right? Going through and playing like Year of Kung Fu and like, you know, all the different NES games. But in Animal Crossing, I remember first getting Balloon Fight from Jingle during Christmas. And that was like such a more special focused experience where it's like, okay, I have this NES game. Like I'm going to actually like play it instead of, you know, having the – it's sort of like with Netflix paralysis. Like, oh my goodness, I have so many things I could watch. I'm not going to watch anything. That's kind of how I felt with those pirated games.
Yeah, there was like a slow drip of these NES games for me because they were sort of the rarest thing in the game, I think, because they were playable things in the game. So I got really good at Clue Clue Land D because
it was
the first time I actually sat down to play that game and figure it out instead of like playing the ROM for 30 seconds and then
Well, that was where
on.
I discovered that there was a Clue Clue Land D as opposed to the just standard Clue Clue Land. It was kind of weird that they included this one random Japanese-only release from the Famicom Disk System as part of the American Animal Crossing release. But they did, and it was opened up a new world.
Yeah, one thing about that is that you could like go to Tom Nook and enter like this crazy alphanumeric code to get, I think, any piece of furniture. Like once you get to a certain point in the game, certain kind of like store level with Tom Nook. And so you could get like those NES games, I think. Or at least like you could get a bunch of crazy Nintendo collectibles and stuff like that.
Oh, so The Legend of Zelda was the one game that you needed the Pro Action Replay to actually get. So that was in the game. Some of the other ones like Punch-Out and Mario, those were through a giveaway, like a Famitsu thing or a cheating device. So, yeah. But it's crazy that like Zelda was just on that GameCube disc.
It's interesting because Zelda, when I played Animal Crossing on GameCube for the first time, like it really reminded me of Zelda, the way it moved from screen to screen.
Right.
Instead of being like free roaming, I was like, man, I'd love to play a Zelda game with this engine.
I know, yeah. Like, I don't know, like, for the new game, does it keep up to the sort of, like, rolling world, or is it, like, what does the world look
yes.
like in the new game?
Okay. It's rolling.
I'm a weirdo, and I prefer the only time it was, like, screen by screen, Zelda style, but I totally get what you mean.
All right, so jumping back in here, I think it's time for the Animal Crossing character elimination round.
Oh, no.
Sudden death. Sorry, Rossetti. I'm going to call out character names, and someone is going to talk a little bit about that character, starting with Rover.
Mm. I love Rover. I yeah. have a plush of Rover on like my – I have like a figure shelf, like a five-year-old, but – I have like a little Rover there, very cute. I got it at Target randomly. Like I was just at Target and I was walking by. I was like, why do they have all these Animal Crossing plushes?
When was this?
Like a while, like a few years ago. Yeah, I also got like a weird Deku Nut Link toy that they had. They just had like random cool Nintendo toys just on this like weird, it was almost like a clearance shelf. It was just like so out of the way. And I was like, what the heck is going on here? They have like some cool stuff at a Target. But yeah, I have a Rover. I love Rover.
I like so how cute. He's kind of creepy looking.
Yeah.
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 I remember when because, you know, just going up with the GameCube version, I was like, oh, Rover's awesome. He's so cute. I had the memory card with him in his little Argyle sweater. But I remember when I first showed Rover to my fiance, she was like, oh, my goodness. He's scary looking. Like, look at his eyes. It's like bloodshot eyes.
I'm looking at dialogue. One of the first things he tells you is, I promise I'm not crazy.
Right. I'm going to sit next. And then if you say, I don't want you to sit next to me, he just sits and he's like, I'm going to sit here anyway.
You get the angry face now forever.
Isabel.
I love Isabel too.
Wow.
I love all these Animal Crossing characters. Isabel's like so cute, but yeah, like as you mentioned earlier, the fandom around her is really creepy. Like people have been really weird towards her. But she's just like, you know, cute and clumsy. And what I really love about New Leaf is obviously like being a mayor, you have like a lot more control over your town, which is really cool. And I like how she's just like so helpful and everything, and it's just so sweet. And it's a nice person to greet or animal to greet every morning, you know.
Oh, I would not blame the fans entirely because I think not in a creepy way, but I think they wanted to make like a Moe character.
Oh, for sure, yeah,
and
definitely.
More like anthropomorphic proportions than the other characters in the game. So I can see why that fed into people sexualizing Isabel. Not to get too far into this, but I can totally understand like why it happened.
So someone pointed out to me once the fact that her name Isabel means is a bell.
Oh
and
my
her
god,
hair,
I did not realize that.
Yeah,
her hair that
looks like a bell bag.
Yeah, and if I can play as Isabel in a game, I will play
I feel
her.
Like she is the face that Animal Crossing needed to branch out and start appearing in like bigger Nintendo franchises because now she's in Smash.
Mario Kart.
And before that she was in Mario Kart 8.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was kind of the point at which like, wow, here's a non-Mario character racing in Mario Kart. That's pretty rare. At that point, I think we just had Link. And so it was like, you know, he kind of stopped and said, what's up? Isabel is in Mario Kart?
Yeah.
This means something. This is important.
Yeah, Isabel is my main in Smash. And it was funny, too, because when Smash Ultimate first came out, she was like breaking the game because she could pocket assist trophies. And so you could see her unleashing Rathaloses from her pocket. She could unleash an infinite amount of Rathaloses from her pocket and like break the game.
Wow.
Nice. Tortimer.
Mm. Old.
So much for Katie's love.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember like who Tortimer is.
He's the mayor.
He's the mayor.
Oh, duh. Okay.
Removed from office.
Yep. He's been excommunicated.
He's on an island, just like Napoleon, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Able was I here. I saw Oba. Rossetti.
So good. There's an amiibo of him.
There is.
Yeah, I have like all of the Animal Crossing amiibos.
They are still the cheapest amiibo. Like there was a clearance.
It was a huge miscalculation, but I'm glad they exist. I have them all.
I think they make up like 40% of the amiibo library. Just like here's every character.
Well, it was for that amiibo festival game, right?
So it was also Nintendo. I think they really wanted to break amiibo out of just Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
And you know, that works really well when you've got one or two amiibo for a game. When you've got like 20 plus cards.
Yeah.
Don't forget the amiibo cards that they released that have an IC chip in them.
Yeah.
Or a
NFC.
NFC, that's it. I think they flew too high too fast.
I miss amiibo, even the bad ones.
I miss amiibo, like in general. Like,
they just got me a Richter Belmont.
I mean, they exist, but they don't do anything anymore. Yeah. You don't get
they're
like
just
costumes.
For Smash, really. Yeah. And it's like they're kind of useless for Smash. It's like they're like AI characters, right? So it's like, what's even the point? I still have like a cute Yarn Yoshi. We had all three, but then we sold some on eBay. So we just had the pink one. But
my Yarn Yoshi are at my office with me.
Well, my pink Yarn Yoshi is so cute.
And Poochie.
You know, Rossetti was cool because he was like a fourth wall breaking character in the GameCube one where there was one interaction where he would pretend to shut off, he would do the CRT effect and pretend to shut off your game, which was like very like eternal darkness sort of kind of like effect. And the other thing about him is you could respond to him. You'd say, okay, you need to apologize to me or something like that. And if you type in like the words like die, mole, or like dirty mole or something like that, he'll like get extra mad at you and be like, you ungrateful little twerp or whatever, you know.
A racist.
Scary thing. Yeah, he's just a huge racist.
KK Slider.
The greatest. DJ KK. Now DJ KK.
Yeah, I don't like the DJ form. It's like... Mm.
I was just watching the Splatoon concert, the live hologram Splatoon concert, and KK Slider is the opening act for that. And it's so fun to see him on stage.
I did not know there were Splatoon concerts.
Yeah, they do it for the Callie Marie and
Marina and Pearl.
Yeah.
It's like the Tupac Hatsune Miku style hologram.
Yeah, because I saw Miku a long time ago. That was an experience. But I'm also really I used to be into Vocaloid music. I don't, not so much anymore, but it's just, I really wanted that, like when they were doing the Splatoon concerts, like fairly regularly in Japan, it was like a couple a year for a bit. And I really wanted them to bring that just like for like, even just like a show in like LA and New York or something, like I would fly to see that. Like that would be so sick. And yet, no.
It's so weird the way William Gibson's writing has become reality. I don't think that's how he envisioned it. Let's talk about Bob and Bianca.
Who are these characters again?
Actually, who is Bob? They're related. They're two white cats.
Bob is the purple cat that's that one of the creators, I forget which creator, thinks that he's like that's his spirit animal or whatever.
Oh.
But Bianca is the blank-faced
yes.
white cat that you can draw her face.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then she goes on to other towns and like, right. the face spreads.
It's actually kind of creepy.
Yeah,
it's super
so creepy.
Yeah. But it's like it's probably based off like some Japanese like urban legend, right, of like, I don't know, like some no-faced cat or something like that.
I don't want to know about it.
But Bob is just a regular villager.
Okay. Apparently he's a lazy cat villager and he's purple.
And he's very popular.
Yeah.
Lazy is the best personality type, I think. Like lazies are so chill. Yeah.
He's a good character.
Yeah.
Honestly, Bob is one of the most popular villagers, I think.
Maybe that's why I put him down.
Yeah.
Joan. Did any of you ever get sucked into Joan's world?
Of stock trading?
It was turnips.
Yeah.
It was like the STALK markets.
Stock.
Like turnip stocks.
Stock, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
It taught me about how, you know, that system is completely arbitrary and our entire country is based on lies, the money system.
I never gained money on that. And it was really tough because it was on – you had to see her on Sunday morning.
Yeah, it was like a weird time.
Yeah.
She would only be in your town until like noon on Sunday morning, and she would sell you turnips for a set amount, And then throughout the week, you could sell them back to the store, but the value would be either more or less than what you paid. And what you really wanted was for the value to go way up.
Right.
And to be able to
just like real life.
Sell for a huge profit. But if you waited too long, it was probably going to drop by the end of the week because I guess the turnips had gone bad. So
right.
You'd lose money.
Yeah.
But everyone's town was different. So people would get online and be like, whose town, you know, has high turnip values today? And everyone – or people would get on like Reddit or whatever and say, my town has – turnips are being sold or bought for like 250 bells.
Turnip arbitrage.
Yep.
Yeah, I like Joan. She's a hard worker. I like that about
but she
her.
She requires hard work to get the most out of her presence.
You can see on
she's
the –
not worth it to me.
In the GameCube one on the initial like train sequence, you can see her in the background and she's dozing off and she's kind of nodding off and then she wakes up every once in a while. She's like in a constant loop of that. That's how you know she's a hard worker. She's falling asleep on the train, you know.
So Tom Nook and the Nooklings, my favorite band. Bob, I take it you're actually kind of a fan of Tom Nook?
I like him now, yes. Actually, I think they gave him kids to humanize him more, to make him into more of a likable character.
I thought they were his nephews.
Well, I mean, like it's like it's a Disney-style thing where it's like Tom Nook is not a sexual creature. He does not reproduce.
Right.
He has nephews. But
yeah. We thought that about Emperor Palpatine, too. And yes.
Well, that's Jedi magic.
Spoiler.
I don't want to know how he did that. But no, I love the – I mean it's so cynical. It's like here are three cute things that look like this other cute thing. But I love the nephews. They're fun. I forget where they came up. Was that Wild World that they were introduced?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and then eventually they take over.
Yeah, New Leaf, they're like the people.
Actually, you know, in the original GameCube one, they might show up at – once you get to the biggest Nookington iteration of his store, he uses them
could
as employees,
be.
I think. I could be wrong about that.
All right. Gulliver.
Oh, yeah.
I
remember that.
He'll take you to the island where you can get Wario's woods, and then you regret your choices.
Gulliver? No, Gulliver is the pelican that just shows up on the shore.
Who rows you like, to the island?
That's
in the,
Cap'n.
Cap'n, that's right.
Cap'n's
the Kappa.
He sings little animalese sea shanties.
That never gets old. So what does Gulliver do? What's his role?
He's the one just he washes up, right?
I
love about his arrival. It was like just the village is like, yeah, there's just like something on the shore. Like, go check it out. And then you go over there and just – he's just hanging out. And I think in – it might be in City Folk – I think you shoot down a UFO,
yeah.
And that's how he arrives.
Yeah.
And he's just wearing a space helmet, like an astronaut helmet, which is adorable and cool.
Gulliver is the connection point from our universe to the Animal Crossing universe because he will quiz you on like, what's the largest ocean? And then you have to say the Pacific Ocean, which means that we're in the same universe as Animal Crossing.
Somewhere out there is Isabel, and I'm going to marry her because I'm a Nintendo fan.
Here we go.
Red.
Red's cute.
Red is really cute.
But he's evil. He keeps selling me counterfeit art.
He's so cute.
Is the pun
I used to have we were talking about those cards earlier. I used to have like a card of Red like on my cork board because it's so cute.
Is the pun Red Fox? Like the comedian? Okay, I thought so.
Yeah.
It's a real Morton Downey style reference in Nintendo games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I went to Korea recently and I got like this figurine that I can't find anywhere on the internet of Red Fox, and you press a little button and he turns a wallpaper into a bag of bells. It's really cool.
Really cool.
Whoa.
But I can't find it anywhere on the internet. It's like one of my most prized possessions.
Jingle.
Oh, so good. Jingle, NES game. Before there was Virtual Console, before there was Nintendo Switch Online, there was Jingle giving you NES games for Christmas.
It was much better than having to swipe five paper cards into the e-reader.
To get Ice Climber.
Yeah. We haven't even talked about the e-reader. That was a massive mistake. But they did a good job with it. Animal Crossing was one of two applications for the e-reader that made it feel justified. The other being all the weird extra levels in Super Mario Bros. 3. Otherwise, though, yeah.
Yeah, there was a separate line of e-reader cards for the game, and they just had random items on them. And a few of the NES games you couldn't get normally. Still, I think we talked about this earlier off mic, but I believe like every item in the game, there's just a password for, right?
Yeah.
That you could just plug in?
Yes, and to my great shame.
In the first game.
Long, long ago, on the GameCube version, when that was a new thing, Tom Hewlett, who now works at WayForward, formerly of Konami, sent me some codes for furniture, but by that point I'd kind of stopped playing. I was supposed to return the favor and give him some codes, and I never did. So, Tom, I still owe you. I apologize. I'll make it up to you with New Horizons. Mm-hmm. Phyllis.
Oh.
She's at the bank, the post office.
Mm. Yeah. The Phyllis is the mean one.
Yes.
I like her. She's an old battle axe.
Yeah, she's super sarcastic, and she, like, the entire time she's thinking, oh my God, what does this idiot want?
It's really cool to kind of explore her dialogue options, because if, like, for instance, like, if you fill up all the mail, she's like, damn, you got a lot of mail or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, oh my goodness, why are you mailing so much stuff? She was mean.
Bob is not a fan of Copper and Booker.
Why not?
Bob does not trust the cops.
I do not know. In this game, they're fine because it's an idyllic world. But Copper, like Booker, is the how are they different? Are they just a team?
One of them is like kind of really an airhead, and the other is kind of overly vigilant.
And they're based on the classic Japanese song about the dog policeman. That's very famous for children.
Yeah.
I have to assume.
That was going to be one of the songs in Donkey Kong Teaches Music for Famicom.
And it's the background music in Frogger, in the original Frogger, Thank you to Chris Kohler for that poll.
And finally, Cap'n.
Yeah, Cap'n. Cap'n's the new rover. Cap'n brings you into the town in his bus.
Does he?
Yeah.
Oh, a bus. Okay,
yeah.
I've forgotten about that. I always think of Cap'n as being the boat guy.
Yeah, he's the boat guy. I think in one of I don't remember if it was City Folk or maybe it's the most recent one. You do ride with him into town on a bus with him. He's the bus driver.
Well, I'll be
an amazing pun because he is a kappa.
Yes, he is a captain and a kappa, and whatever.
No, it's good.
Good times.
It was 2002. Who could even say what a kappa was except super weebs like all of us,
or those of us who played Final Fantasy VI? Except they called him
Imp.
Bastards. All right, let's talk a little bit about the history of the games. We've kind of touched on each of the games, but it's worth just very quickly going through the Animal Crossing series to kind of give a little more context to all the things we've talked about. I guess we did this backwards, but oh well. The very first game was called Dobutsu no Mori, which means animal forest or forest of animals, and it was called that because there are animals living in a forest. That's right. It was an N64 game designed for the 64DD add-on, which wisely was converted to a cartridge. But if you've ever played this game, it's it has a lot of the basics of Animal Crossing, but it also feels very basic. I don't know if any of you have ever experimented with this one.
One thing I did recently was I went through and I listened to the soundtrack for it because it's so close to the GameCube one, but they did change some of the tunes. And so like the intro theme is like a little bit – it rocks a little bit harder and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. For me, that was really interesting because whenever I can get more of that Animal Crossing music, I will. And I realize, I've never listened to that soundtrack. So it is different.
Yes. And basically 9 months later, they kind of retuned Animal Crossing or Dobutsu no Mori to release it as Dobutsu no Mori Plus on GameCube. And that came to the U.S. as Animal Crossing. And it was pretty much the same game except they added more stuff. They polished some things up. They tweaked some things. They added elements like the GBA link cable and the e-reader. They also included, as you've mentioned before, a special memory card for the GameCube. Not only did that have a special sticker on it with Rover, but there was actually content on the memory card that when you used it to save your game for the first time, unique content, I don't remember what it was, but that would be saved into the game and then deleted from the card. So if you tried to use the memory card again for another copy of Animal Crossing – it didn't work.
Wow, I didn't
Which,
remember
of
that.
Course, you know, everyone who owned Animal Crossing had this memory card. So it was kind of meant as not a deterrent to reselling the game, but basically like here's your bonus for buying it new as opposed to being a jerk and buying it used from GameStop or Funko Land. How dare you?
2002 was the real escalating pissing contest between Nintendo and Sony and Microsoft with their consoles. And it's funny how this release, just a non-fuzzy N64 game during all of that mania, trying to make the shiniest, fanciest games ever, but people still were attached to it. No one said this game looks bad or ugly or old.
Yeah, I think the cartoonishness of it and the kind of whimsy of the characters really – and just the overall vibe of it really goes a long way toward making it not need to be realistic.
And it made it very easy to port to the DS because it started as an N64 game and never really – I didn't play any of the Wii one or the 3DS one, but I have to assume like the general look did not improve very much technically from the GameCube version. Am I correct or incorrect on that?
It looks better.
Okay.
I mean, it's
the Switch one looks
improved.
Really good. Like, yeah. It looks like a modern game.
It's HD. Maybe.
There's some cool like shading going on with the Switch version. Yeah. I've noticed some, like, especially as I've been releasing more like screenshots and like character renders and everything. Like, there's this like weird, almost like dithering effect. Like, yeah. It looks like really cool and like interesting, but yeah. It's like so subtle that like most people probably won't notice it.
Yeah.
But like in these like high res, I'm like, this is like a cool effect they're doing with everything in this game. It's interesting.
I have read nothing whatsoever about this game. I am
me
going
too.
To just jump into it and let it surprise me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of the opposite. Yeah. I'm so excited. I'm like, I need to know more.
I saw like the Nintendo Direct trailer, the first one. That was it for me.
So the GameCube version introduced the Able Sisters, who run a little clothing shop, and they give you the ability to create and wear custom patterns. It introduced the Museum and Blathers. Is that right? I made these notes when I was very sleepy on the airplane last night. Maybe mixed up here.
You're talking about introducing them from they weren't in the 64DD version?
Yeah. Oh. Is that right?
I actually don't know.
Okay.
Did the 64 version wasn't day-night cycle capable, right?
No, it was. The 64 version had a battery in it.
Oh,
and real-time
right.
clock was a thing in cartridges starting with Pokemon Silver and Gold.
Right.
Blathers first appeared in Animal Crossing Plus. So.
Oh, okay. Yep. So, yeah, there was no music.
New to the
interesting.
GameCube.
Like, what was even in that game?
I don't know.
Like, what was the end goal there?
It was the first game with Tortimer. It was the first game with Bianca. It was the first game to let you travel between towns because you could put your character on the memory card and plug it into someone else's machine, which is really cool.
One thing about that I wanted to mention about the Able Sisters is, like, I think for a kid, it felt really cool that if you visit – there's two Able Sisters. One of them's like very extroverted and the other one doesn't want to talk to you. And if you visit the introverted one every day, like slowly she starts to open up and she starts to like talk to you more and eventually she becomes like, you know, one of your friends. And I think that's like a really good – cool example in the game of, you know, you put in the time. You sort of make your mark on this game and this little world.
Yeah, I have a nephew like that. So
yeah,
it's relatable. It's real. Yeah, so basically it made lots of tiny tweaks but also some big tweaks from the N64 version. It was definitely a more complete game, and I think it's good that this was the game that the series made its international debut with, because I think if it had debuted with the N64 game, we probably would have been like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But the first really big breakout for the series was Animal Crossing Wild World in 2005 on DS. And it was one of those games released right as the DS started to pick up and as the DS started to catch on with kind of non-core gamers. And along with, you know, Nintendogs and Mario Kart DS, this was the other really big game for 2005 from Nintendo. And it was a big deal. I remember, like, even people – I was working at 1UP at the time. People at 1UP or posting on NeoGAF who weren't into this kind of game, who were super cynical about Nintendo at the time, who were like – baby games, still really got into this one.
Yeah. I mean, once you put that game on a portable system like the DS, right, it was just like a rocket ship.
Mm-hmm.
I remember not knowing about Wi-Fi around this time and thinking like, no, you need a cord for the internet. What are you talking about? And then I found out about Wi-Fi through like 1UP podcast. So I bought like a dongle for my my desktop computer. Mm-hmm. And when you had to leave your game on and open for people to connect to it. And when there was someone on my DS – in my town for the first time, that was like a holy shit moment. Like, how is this happening? This is not real.
Magic. That was I think it was like the second Nintendo game to have Wi-Fi connectivity after Mario Kart DS. And yes, it was definitely one of those things you had to get that special dongle and use it to connect to Nintendo Wi-Fi service. You could also go to McDonald's and use their Wi-Fi zone.
I remember DS all greasy and sticky.
I remember when Mario Kart DS first came out and they first opened up that Nintendo Wi-Fi zone. There was a McDonald's one block away from 1UP's offices. So I actually went and wrote an article about this, like sitting outside of McDonald's on Market Street trying to play Mario Kart. I was like, wow, I'm actually doing this. So you don't actually have to go eat at McDonald's. You can just sit outside and everyone will stare at you like a freak.
Enjoy the ambiance.
But yeah, Wild World, I was definitely a big fan of it and wrote about it a lot at 1UP. I reviewed it. That was one of the reviews I wrote where it was actually a cartoon And I drew like my character interacting with the different characters within the game. Very little text to it. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, it seemed to work with that game. And
that game had so much more content than the GameCube one, too. It was it was amazing that it would go to that portable form factor, and then it just got so much larger.
I just feel like it's a game that really inspired creativity and really inspired community. It really got a lot of people sharing and visiting each other. And that was one of the first ways I really interacted with our community at 1UP was playing Animal Crossing. Like people who posted on the blogs there, you know, we would open up staff Wi-Fi connections. And I think the other big proponent of the game at the site was Jane Pinkard. And we just like have time where we hung out and people from the community would come in and play and, you know, drop fruit and leave messages and stuff. And it was really cool. It was like, wow, you know, this is a really fun way to interact with our audience that isn't so formal and stuffy. There was that high element of abstraction because Nintendo was like, oh, you can't interact too much on the internet because you might molest a child. So they kind of helicopter mommed it. And it was okay. Like the abstraction of it and the remoteness of it made it more interesting because you'd see someone running around and you were like, who is this person? Do I know this person? Oh, yeah. I think I recognize their tag. I don't know. I just really enjoyed it.
One thing about Wild World for me that's really sentimental is I mentioned, you know, being in a long distance relationship. I remember I actually would share – I sent the cart to at the time my girlfriend. She's now my fiance. And so she would start a file on the same cart. And then when she would go back to the room, I would be in the bed and I would be sleeping. Like my character would be in the bed sleeping. And it was kind of – I don't know. It was like a nice way for us to like – be playing in this same – and is a feeling of togetherness when we're obviously in a long-distance relationship.
That's really sweet. So things that this game did over the GameCube version, it dropped the screen-by-screen navigation in favor of just a single continuous world that was easier to move around in. Mm-hmm. It added Celeste in the observatory. It introduced the cafe with Brewster.
Oh, yeah.
He's like an eagle or hawk that makes – maybe he's a pigeon.
Yeah, he's like a pigeon.
He's a pigeon who makes coffee. KK Slider hangs out in there on Saturdays and plays music.
Yes.
They broke out more of the shops. So the Able Sisters have their own clothing shop where they exclusively sell clothing. You can't buy it at Tom Nook's anymore. And of course, they added the internet element, which no longer exists because Nintendo shut down its Wi-Fi service in like 2010. Thanks, Nintendo. Or 2014.
R.I.P.
So, Katie, tell us about Animal Crossing City Folk, because I didn't ever play that one at all.
Yeah, so this is like my introduction to Animal Crossing after hearing about it for years and years and years. And I admittedly had to do some research before coming to this podcast because I was like, I don't remember much about this game. But I do remember – one thing I remember very clearly is how weirdly it controlled because you had to do the Wiimote. And it was kind of almost like a point and click almost, like how you moved around. And one thing I really remember is when you're exploring, you could like see another villager across or like another animal across like a river and you could like click on them and wave to them. And that was so fun and so cute. And that's like the one feature I wish would come back somehow, like just a wave button because they would just wave back and it was just nice. But I don't know. It's a – like I feel like I got into it, but I don't think I got like as much into Animal Crossing until like New Leaf where I played like every day and it was like a religious part of my routine almost. And like I mentioned earlier, I stopped playing once Anchovy moved away because it broke my heart. And I was so sad because that bird was the best. But one thing that was – I think it's called the Wii Connect 24. Is that what I wrote down? So it's kind of like Nintendo's way of delivering DLC to players. So like basically like what games do now as like live services where there's like holiday events and that sort of thing. Like – Nintendo would just drop in random items for, like, Christmas or some Nintendo-themed items, like, randomly and whatnot. Personally, I never used the functionality because I think I was too dumb to know about it. Because I was like in high school at the time, so I wasn't paying attention to that type of stuff. But that was, I guess, like a banner. Like that was, I think, the only game I remember that used that like meaningfully, unless I'm like misremembering entirely.
I think they did build that into some other services, and it was part of the system for the Wii because you could do the Mii Parade.
Yeah.
And if you were like me and filled out your friend code system because you publicized it on a big website, you would have so many Miis in your Mii Plaza that it would actually cause your system to chug and go blank for like 5 minutes at a time trying to load everything.
This also That's supported Wii Speak, which was all the fun of a conference call in your living room.
In City Folk, I don't remember if that's the first one where you can actually make your character a Mii, right? You can go to the hair salon and turn your character into a Mii face.
That's terrible. Mm.
Yeah.
Who would do that?
I did it. And the other thing about City Folk is it feels like City Folk and Wildwood are the most similar out of all of them.
Yeah, definitely. I think they had the shortest time span between them too. It's like right. It was 2008 because I remember I was like a freshman in high school when it came out. So it was 2008.
Yeah. I feel like it's a testament to how much content Wild World had that you could essentially port that game to the console and it still felt like it was this fully featured game with just adding that city. I remember when I first got City Folk, I reset it. It must have been at least 300 times to get the villagers that I wanted from the GameCube version.
Well, I did not play that one. I waited for New Leaf, which came out in 2013. That's right.
That's when we started Retronauts. It was a new game.
Mm-hmm.
Restarted Retronauts.
Right. And I wrote about it for US Gamer when it was a brand new site. Back in the days when I could just write about stuff and not have to be the boss. Those were the good times. So, that was like a 9-year gap between games for me, 8 or 9. So that's just about the right amount of time, I think, to keep it fresh. So I was ready for it. And it also made really big changes to the game. You become the mayor because Tortimer pisses off to an island and he leaves behind Isabel, the internet's puppy waifu, who basically is kind of there as a symbol of the quality of life improvements. She lets you set all kinds of settings to kind of automate the town. You can change, as you mentioned before, like kind of how the time of day system works. Mm-hmm. And you can basically turn on one town improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So if you plan to be away and not play for a long time, you can kind of keep the town self-cleaning so you don't get overrun by weeds.
The beautiful town ordinance, mm-hmm. I think that's what it's called. Yeah. I think it's what I had actually, even though I played every day, so I shouldn't have done a different thing.
But there's big civic improvement options. You can influence villagers to stay or leave more easily. Rossetti stops being such a dick when you don't save at shutdown, which is kind of his role. He was like, hey, you're supposed to save the game instead of scumming by resetting without saving because you want to get optimal choices. He toned it down a lot. And things like, blathers, examining fossils and art and stuff went through much more quickly. You had more fashion options. You could do more to customize your character.
All the characters got longer in New Leaf, and so they had more defining features. In Wild World, you could change their hair and that sort of thing, but this was one where you could really start to flesh out every part of them, including the pants and their socks and stuff like that.
And finally, we come to New Horizons in 2020, which none of us have played yet, right?
No.
No.
You haven't been able to demo it?
Unfortunately, no.
I don't think they've done any events. They didn't even demo it at E3 or anything. Like, it's just like a secret.
I think
January at this point.
They
so
just
like,
know it's going to sell.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like they don't need to demo it.
There will be an event next year or next month.
I hope.
I guess by the time this is recorded last month in New York and San Francisco. And
I hope. I really want to play it.
But in any case,
they could also just launch it and it would be fine.
We're recording this less than 2 months from the game's release, so it'll be here soon enough.
What a hotly anticipated game too, right? Like it's become such a meme now that people create these like Animal Crossing satanic rituals with like upside down pentagrams with amiibo cards and stuff like that to try and summon the game.
There was like this – some magazine published like a renders of new things coming to Animal Crossing, and one of them was like a frog chair. And it's become such a huge meme of just like this frog chair. And people have been like remaking it in like 3D.
I thought the froggy chair was already in the game.
Maybe it was. I don't know. It just seemed like something that's like propagated from like New Horizons, people are just like clamoring for anything.
Yeah, so no, I saw that. It was a few weeks ago on Reddit, just like exploded.
So
like,
huge.
It was like
everywhere.
The entire Animal Crossing Reddit was froggy chair posts with thousands and thousands of upvotes.
It's crazy. Someone made it in real life. It's crazy. I don't understand what's – I don't know how it started, what's going on really, but it's just been fascinating because they're just clinging on to anything.
Kids want their Animal Crossing.
Before we go, I did want to bring up one thing, that this series spawned a movie.
Yes.
The anime movie, 2006 it came out. Never was localized, but it's all on YouTube, subtitled. So
it's so good.
There is an anime. So you've seen it?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I was pulling it up on my screen. You were pointing at it. I was just wondering, like, can you tell us what it's about or if it's any animation is good?
The animation is really good, and it's amazing to see, you know, what – I mean, it just goes to show you there's so many Nintendo franchises that would make, like, incredible animated movies, but this is definitely one of them. They made it, and the art style is really beautiful. It's like anime versions of the characters, but they don't depart too much from it. Like maybe the eyes are a little bit more expressive and that sort of thing. But it's about a villager. I think it's a female villager who starts, and she's, you know, going through a town and she develops friendships. And, you know, there's sad parts of it too. You know, it's kind of – I feel like it tries to go through the arc of someone sort of playing the game and developing these relationships and the things that sort of happen. And it's a really good movie. You should go watch it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's like how there's a Professor Layton anime movie that's never come out here either from around the same time.
No,
it's like,
that did.
That did come here?
Yeah.
Oh,
I
really?
I saw it at Comic-Con New York.
Really? Wow, okay. So, yeah, the Animal Crossing. Still, you watch that on YouTube. It's apparently it's good.
It is really good.
All right. There were a few Animal Crossing spinoffs to fill the void between New Leaf and New Horizons. Happy Home Designer was a frivolous little piece of fluff.
I love Happy Home Designer.
But I enjoyed it.
I got really into it. Everyone complained about that game. But it was just so fun. And then they brought all the home stuff into New Leaf, too, which is really cool. Like, they're just like, and now the home decorating is also way more robust.
Oh, yeah. New Leaf got a huge update called Welcome Amiibo.
Yeah.
And it not only did it add Amiibo functionality, but it also added a lot of elements from Happy Home Designer.
Yeah.
My wife is an interiors photographer.
That's right.
Who shoots homes. So I let her play that for a while, and for, like, 2 or 3 weeks, she was really into it, and then she pretty much saw all there was to do. And now she plays a similar game on her phone and spends a lot of money on it. but, you know, it kind of got her hooked on that style of game, so I guess it's my own fault because our Apple accounts are hooked to my bank account.
There was also, like, a Sanrio collaboration with Happy Home Designer where you could get Hello Kitty in the game, which is, like, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
There was also Amiibo Festival, which was a huge miscalculation. Yeah. By all accounts, is not a good board game.
More like Amiibo Graveyard.
Oh.
I went there. I miss Amiibo so much.
And,
Well, I wanted to say I really wanted to – I've never played Amiibo Festival, but I wanted to play it because you have those, like, Animal Crossing models in HD.
Yeah, that's what everyone was like, oh, my God, they're making an Animal Crossing for Wii U. This is the next step. And then it just didn't
happen. It was that. The HD is coming soon enough with New Horizons.
And you saw the same thing in the Mario Kart 8 DLC with Animal Crossing. You see, like, an Animal Crossing.
Yeah. It was so exciting. And then it just didn't. I mean, I'm glad they waited.
But we already have Animal Crossing in HD with Pocket Camp.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
4K.
Yep. It's the mobile game version of Animal Crossing. So it's got, like, microtransactions and stuff.
Yeah.
So if you like that kind of thing and aren't annoyed by monetization on mobile phones the way that I am, then it's probably good.
I'm happy that they didn't make it. They didn't try to make it like Animal Crossing. It is just like a completely different.
It's kind of its own thing.
Yeah.
I got really into it for like a few months and then I fell off. And I tried to get back into it earlier this month because I was like, I just want to play. I want to get excited for New Horizons. And there's just so much new stuff now that I'm like, I don't even know how to play this anymore. It's like way overwhelming than it was at launch, which is cool, I guess. Like, it's a way more robust game. But I just think Pocket Camp's not for me because there's just too much weird.
That's how mobile phone games are. It's just like,
definitely.
Blam in your face. It's so confusing. It doesn't make sense. Please give us more money to play longer.
Yeah, like, I was really into this dress up game called Love Nikki Jessup Queen for like about 2 years, and then I stepped away for like 6 months, and I tried to go back into it, and it was just I could not figure out how to play anymore because there's so much new stuff. And mobile games are constantly like that, where they're just constantly adding new stuff because they have to retain players somehow. And Pocket Camp is the same exact way.
All right, we're wrapping now. But before we go, Bob, would you like to make a closing statement about Stardew Valley?
Oh, yeah. So Stardew Valley, the creators just announced that the game sold 10 million copies. And I really feel like Stardew Valley was the Animal Crossing replacement in the 7 years we haven't had a game. It came out 5 years ago. So Stardew Valley borrowed a lot from Animal Crossing. It's basically like Animal Crossing meets Harvest Moon. And the popularity of Stardew Valley is so undeniable that I really wonder if some of it is going to rub off on the new Animal Crossing just because it already has crafting. We know that much. I feel like there might be some more Stardew-ish touches just because that formula has proven to be very successful for an indie developer.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll see how it goes when Animal Crossing New Horizons launches in a few days or last week or whenever this episode comes out relative to the release of the game. Yes. But I'm looking forward to it. I feel like I will play a lot of it. And I guess I should just clear my April.
I took an 18-year break. It's time to play
time,
again.
Bob. Yeah. It's time. Welcome back. Welcome back to our little animal friend.
There are so many cockroaches.
You don't have to go back to that one, Bob. You can start fresh. Mm. That's why it's called New Horizons.
I've forsaken my old villagers.
Right. Let them die. All right. So this has
what
been
a nice note to end on.
Retronauts talking about Animal Crossing in a grim way. I am Jeremy Parrish, and I am grateful for you listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, you can find more Retronauts, not about Animal Crossing, but about other things, at retronauts.com and on most podcatchers. And if you really like it, you can subscribe to us on Patreon, patreon.com/retronauts, where by subscribing for $3 a month, you get every episode a week early each Monday. And it's in a higher bitrate quality with no advertisements or sponsorships, which is cool. And if you really, really like us, you can subscribe for $5, in which case you get the Monday episodes early. And you also get every other Friday a Patreon exclusive bonus episode. So give it some thought. What's the right thing to do here? Anyway, even if you don't want to support us that way, just tell your friends about us and they'll be like, wow, I've got to listen to that podcast. And that's how we grow. Bob?
Hey, I'm Bob Mackey. I'm on Twitter as Bob Servo. I do other podcasts, including Talking Simpsons and What a Cartoon on the Talking Simpsons Patreon. It's at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. If you sign up there, we have all kinds of bonus podcasts, over 100 bonus podcasts that are not available on the free feeds. But you can also just listen to the other podcasts for free if you would like to, and I recommend it. Thank you.
Mike, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, I'm Mike Choi, Mecha Choi on Twitter. I have a lot of fun, weird video game related hardware projects for 2020. So go follow me there if you want to go see a bunch of weird mods and weird abominations of hardware video game stuff. And also go buy a Flipgrip if you want to support me and Jeremy.
Right on. Actually, the money from Flipgrip goes to Retronauts.
That's
so
right.
That's another way to support this podcast.
It's the sweetest plum.
Only $12.
$12. All right. And Katie.
I'm Katie McCarthy. You can find me on Twitter at YumeCatie. It's YumeCaty because I spelled my name weird. You can find my work on usgamer.net. I also host a podcast called Bad End with indie game developer Kyle Cookstell and writer Joshua Calixto. And we just shoot the shit. We just did a cool month of Game of the Decades type stuff. We had Ben Pack on from Giant Bomb. We had Tim Rogers from Kotaku on and Emily Rose of Rebind, so we had a bunch of cool episodes last month. And yeah, I do that every 2 weeks, so yeah.
All right, and finally, you can find me, Jeremy Parrish, on Twitter as GamesBite and on YouTube chronicling the chronology of systems like the Nintendo Entertainment System and the Game Boy. And I already did Virtual Boy, so I don't have to do that anymore. But please look forward to that each week, each Wednesday. And you can also find me at Limited Run Games doing the kind of stuff that I'm doing here now, but for Limited Run Games and all the cool games that we publish there from indies and from classic games. So it's relevant to your interests if you are interested in this show. Anyway, thanks again for listening. And until next time, we're going to be out there catching bugs and smacking the people we don't like with a bug net.